More than 80% of councils around the country are planning a double-digit rates rise this coming year, with nearly one in five either above or hovering just below a 20% rates rise. Wellington City Council's draft 10-year plan envisages a doubling of homeowners' rates bills within a decade. Councils face a $52 billion infrastructure deficit, according to the Infrastructure Commission, and local authorities say higher rates rises will be the norm for years to come. This at a time when councils are already pushing their debt-to-income boundaries. Local Government New Zealand President and Selwyn District Mayor Sam Broughton says the funding system for councils is broken. I asked him if he had seen anything like this in recent memory.
No, never. I've been on council since 2010 as a councillor and now as the mayor. And normally councils are talking about 4 or 5% rates increases. Anyone talking 6 or 7, you know, it was dramatic conversation for the community. There was one or two occasions where a handful of councils around the country had conversations in the teens and maybe slightly higher, but that was for one-off projects or particular things that were exclusive to their district. This year we're seeing the conversation be a national conversation. It's happening for all councils and all communities all at the same time. And it's very challenging.
And often in that annual planning process, you'll start high, you'll start in double digits. As you say, you'll come down into single figures. We're still not quite through the process, but you just do not see that happening this year. These numbers are getting close to what's going to be.
Yeah, I think if we'd looked at the numbers that council started with when they began their long-term plan process October, November last year, their numbers would have been 30s, 40s, 50s. And so there's been a lot of hard work that councils have done and elected members have asked for to get the numbers to where they are now. They're still very challenging numbers for communities, but a lot of work's been done to make sure they're not conversations about 30 and 40% rates increases.
This is another matter. It's multi-year double-digit increases for some councils. In fact, one in particular, Wellington City Council, if its plan is followed through, rates, current day rates, will something like double within a decade. And do you believe this is tolerable, Sam? I mean, you're also, as local leaders, fronting up to this to your communities, and probably the impact, the realisation hasn't really fully sunk in yet. But is that kind of a track going to be possible going forward?
Yeah, I'm really proud of the way that councils are trying to tackle this conversation rather than bury it or hide it or just pass it off for a future generation to have to deal with. I think part of the problem that we've had is councils keeping rates artificially low for a wee bit too long. We think about COVID, and there was a call to keep, you know, rates at 0% lifts, and so on. We had a 1 point something, you know, but that could have been an 8 or a 9. And so there's a gap of 6 or 7 that you're having to catch up at some point in the future. So we do have to tackle this question. It's hard for communities and for councils at the moment, but it's just the true cost of what infrastructure is for our communities. So we can't just say, oh, let's just artificially keep it low and then hope in 10 years' time the problem goes away. That doesn't solve anything.
Looking at this, though, councils have got a $52 billion infrastructure deficit, according to the Infrastructure Commission. That's just the bit that councils are, under current structure, liable for, and it either gets delivered or it doesn't, but we're starting to see what happens when it doesn't. Let's talk also about debt. Have many councils pretty much hit debt ceilings? Is borrowing out of the picture going forward, Sam?
And some councils have used borrowing and are at the limits that the LGFA sets for us around keeping, within 280% of revenue. Many councils aren't anywhere near that limit. Our council has a self-imposed 220% limit, and so over the next 10 years we get very close to that. Many other councils are just starting the conversation about borrowing, and traditionally it hasn't been perhaps for their community, a way of funding things. They've forward funded them rather than borrowing to fund them. Borrowing needs to be part of the future. If we're going to create infrastructure that's going to last 50 to 100 years, we shouldn't be looking to pay for it all today. But thinking about those that are going to consume that infrastructure over the coming decades, also having a part to play in paying for it. And that's where borrowing has got a big part to play in reducing the infrastructure deficit that we currently have, but also thinking about making sure we have the right infrastructure on the ground for the New Zealand we want to see for our children.
I asked whether you believe multi-year double-digit rates increases in some instances, or a doubling of rates in a decade in one instance, is going to be tolerable. And by that, is it going to be politically tolerable? What would you say?
I think that is happening in a number of councils. I know that's almost true here in Selwyn. So we're looking at 16% this year, 14 and 12 over the next 3 years, an average of 8.5% over 10 years, which sees nearly a doubling of rates over the next 10 years. So that's a very tricky conversation. But I think that we also need to look at the value that rates provide back to communities. At the moment, we've asked Infometrics to give us some data. Average rates is about $2,900 a year. That's the same cost as many insurance bills or electricity bills are for a year. And for your rates bill, you get all your roads, all your parks, all your swimming pools, all your libraries, all your water supplies, all your wastewater dealt with, all of your waste recycling collected up and dealt with. So there's a huge amount that actually people and communities and families get for their rates. So I think we need to think about the value that there sits there. And also, New Zealand is one of the most over-centralized country in the OECD. So $2,900 a year in rates, and yet the average household pays about $37,000 in tax. And so when we're thinking about the balancing and the rebalancing of how we fund infrastructure and who provides what in communities, we've got a very Wellington-centric view of how things are decided and determined. And maybe there's other ways that New Zealand could reshape ourselves that might deliver more for less if we had a more local approach to the delivery of infrastructure and decisions.
Let's have a look at that. Ironically, the biggest city with the most ratepayers, being Auckland, is coming in under its proposals under 10%, around 7.5% this year. But let's look at your argument for a change in the division of income between central and local government. Because the point you've made is that GDP growth costs councils, they've got to pay often for the local infrastructure, yet it is a fiscal gain for the government because taxpayer or tax returns increase. Could you expand on that argument? You've got to convince a lot of people, starting with a government that does not look like it's going to be able to get out of deficit itself in the foreseeable. The next lot of books coming out in the budget will be interesting on that track. But can you start to make the case for what you would argue is not only an unfair division of income, but one that is becoming unsustainable?
Yeah, I think it's been really welcomed to the views of Minister Bishop recently, where he's talked about the GST on new builds being returned to councils. That doesn't help every council equally, and it's not going to be a silver bullet to change this. But it's the first time the government's looked at revenue sharing in a way that's beyond just councils collecting rates, which, and for councils, rates is over 50% of their income. Rates and debt are the two key tools that councils have. So when costs need to go up and rates is your only tool, rates have to increase. I think if we look at growth and the investment that councils make in roads and water and wastewater supplies, that's all council either debt or rates that needs to fund that. Developers get involved in that as well through development contributions. But like you say, in any growth that happens, the increase in population, the new businesses that come in, the economic activity that happens, all of the PAYE, all of the GST, all of the tax from that and the benefit of that growth currently all goes back to central government. So I think we need to think about how we share the revenue of growth and how we think about sharing economic development within the regions of New Zealand by thinking about a revenue sharing approach rather than just councils pay for this stuff but then receive no benefit from that beyond.
Where else does that go? Infometrics has found that giving GST on rates back to councils would cost the government about $1.1 billion a year. As I said, good luck getting that out of them at the moment, but let's discuss. But is that anything like enough? Where else would that revenue allocation need to change in your view?
So we would like to see a toolbox approach to funding for local government. At the moment, it's rates, a few user charges and borrowing. And some councils have some investments, and that some councils don't have investments, but might return a dividend to them. So we would also like to see a conversation about mineral royalties. At the moment, that all goes to central government. There could be conversations about stamp duty, which is about transfer of land, happens in jurisdictions overseas, where you might see a percentage of that come back to councils. Congestion charging and tourist levies. I know that 1% of the current lift in Mackenzie District's LGP is because they need to clean public toilets twice a day instead of once a day. That's, you know, they don't have the population to contribute to that, and currently the tourists aren't providing any ability to fund that. So there's conversations about the tourist flow in New Zealand. So yeah, we would like to see that toolbox, because tourism doesn't affect everywhere equally in the same way that new house builds doesn't affect everyone equally, or mineral extraction everyone equally. So if councils can have a toolbox where they say this approach will work for us maybe for the next 3 years, maybe for the next 10 years, but a council down the road might need a different tool, we need the ability to be flexible for local government funding.
Sam Broughton there, Local Government New Zealand President and Selwyn District Mayor, just reminding you, more than 83% of councils around the country planning a double-digit rates rise this year. Nearly one in five are above or hovering just below a 20% rates rise. Many planning multi-year double-digit rates rises. 23 minutes past nine on Nine to Noon. The Principal Economist at Infometrics is Brad Olson. Good morning, Brad.
Kia ora, good morning.
I'll come back in a moment to some of those ideas that Sam had for alternative sources of revenue and more revenue sharing with government. But first, this will be the largest average increase in rates since 1990, so around 35 years. What's behind it all of a sudden, Brad?
Well, the biggest part is around those much, much larger infrastructure costs, particularly over the last couple of years. You look at, and probably importantly, above the rate of headline inflation. So we talk about the Consumers Price Index a lot. That's gone up sort of around 20 to 25% over the last three and a bit years. But importantly, that's a good measure if you're a household that buys bananas. Councils don't do that. They buy a different set of goods. And so when we had a look at some of the big parts of spending, and that is around infrastructure, the likes of building a bridge at the end of last year was 38% more expensive than what councils would have been seeing at the back in 2020. The likes of sewerage systems up 30%, roads and water systems up around 27%. Now, of course, we always expected a bit of inflation, but not nearly as much as has actually come through. So the likes of bridges are now 24% more expensive than anyone would have thought a couple of years back. Now, all of those are pretty large in terms of the sorts of values that they add up. So if you look back to councils when they last put forward their long-term plans, they were expecting to put forward something in the vicinity of $77 billion worth of infrastructure over the next decade. Our analysis shows that to deliver just that exact same amount of infrastructure, but now at the much higher price that it would cost $88 billion. So you've got to find nearly $11 billion just to build the exact same stuff as before. That's before all of the additional challenges that have come out of the likes of Cyclone Gabrielle and the general infrastructure deficits elsewhere across the country.
Why is infrastructure that much more expensive? We know there were supply chain disruptions. We know there were all sorts of issues caused by the pandemic and post-pandemic. But how can it be, you know, 40% more expensive to build a bridge in just the last 3 years?
Well, I think that's partly because we've now started to get on board with the idea that actually our infrastructure is pretty broken and we need to invest a lot more in it. So we're trying to do a whole lot. We're trying to do, you know, probably a decade and a bit's worth of work in a much shorter space of time. That means that everyone is competing for more resources, be it, you know, councils, be it central government, be it the private sector. Everyone's trying to put that in. You hear that in Wellington where, you know, everyone's saying, look, we can't get additional water technicians because everyone else wants them as well. So there's only so much work we can do. It's those sort of issues that, again, I think we've let them build up over time. They've all of a sudden sort of sprung out into the consciousness. I mean, those rates rise figures that you're talking of, the average potential for 15% this year, that would be the largest since councils amalgamated back in 1989-1990. So, you know, this is a whole sort of shift in the sorts of values that councils are having to bring in. It's not just the infrastructure, though. It's operating costs that have increased above inflation. It's the likes of labour costs for local councils that have also increased above comparable average benchmarks. It's interest costs. And importantly, those interest costs means that you can't just keep loading stuff onto debt and hoping the problem goes out a couple of years. You've got to pay for that debt every year. And with interest rates at the high levels they are, the sorts of interest repayments that councils are making, currently 64% higher than back in 2019.
All right. I asked Sam whether these kinds of rates increases as projected are politically sustainable. If you've got a $4,000 rates bills, which is kind of middle of the road for many urban areas anyway, metro areas anyway. That's $400 if it's a 10% rates rise. It's $800 if it's a 20% rate rise. And as I said, the issue, this is year on year in some councils in the capital, looking at doubling current rates bills in 10 years. So the question is, if that is not politically tenable, what to do about the funding sources for these councils? Let's just touch briefly on the water component of this. I know this is a huge factor for some West Coast councils, for example, with three waters gone. What do you make of the new model announced over the weekend for Auckland Watercare, allowing it to borrow, allowing the council essentially to get these borrowing costs off books? Is that feasible for many councils? Would many just be too small for that model?
Well, I think certainly there's a question over how some of those smaller operations are going to be able to band together, because if you're a bigger council and you've got a better looking balance sheet, you're probably not going to want to take on someone who's smaller and got sort of more comparable debt that needs to be taken up. So I do think that central government is likely to have to step in there at some point. But the other sort of challenge here is that, remember, that might do you all right from a council point of view in terms of not having to put up rates. But households have still got to pay at some point. Now, maybe you get some greater borrowing ability for those water entities. But there was a conversation that happened in Wellington recently where, you know, rates weren't going to increase quite as much because there'd be a sludge levy. Now, that was great in terms of the rates number not going up. As a household, I just get two bills now. I get the rates bill and I get the sludge levy separately. So I'm still paying a lot of money. And I think what this comes down to is, be it rates, be it, you know, outside operations, be it the likes of water entities or whatever it is, the question really for households is, given we've let things sort of slip away so much on the infrastructure front, what are we happy to pay for? And most importantly, if we're not happy to pay those high rates, what are we happy to give up on? Because someone's got to pay for that water infrastructure, someone's got to pay for the roads, and if we don't put up the rates and find some money to pay for it, then councils won't be able to invest and you'll have those potholes keep coming.
Let's look at this break between what the government gets out of GDP increases or growth, essentially. I know it's a crude measure, but it's the one we use, and what the councils get, which was Sam Broughton's point here. It all gets eaten up. The councils spend the money on the infrastructure for newly developed areas in their districts, but all the economic growth and tax revenue out of that growth goes to central government. They've got a graph that shows the split of taxation as a percentage of GDP compared to local government rates, and it's basically flatlined for the last century and a half for councils. In fact, it's lower than it was in the 1920s and 1930s. And as big growth and tax takes started in the mid-70s, and then you had the rise in indirect taxes in the 1980s, 1990s, you've got flatlining rate share, and it's government taxation that's taken the bulk of the increase. Does he have a point? Do the councils have a point?
Oh, I think they do. I mean, I think if you look at the likes of the infrastructure deficit, for example, councils, local councils, are responsible for around a quarter of it, yet they take in about 10% of the total revenue. I mean, that's a pretty simple, you know, difference to be looking at in terms of, you have to deal with this much of the problem, but you get that much of the money. And that's true, I think, across a number of areas. The other challenge is that for councils, they don't necessarily have the incentives to be able to grow. You know, from the likes of a central government point of view, more people coming into the country and working means more PAYE. It means more GST that comes in so that you can provide those services for a larger population. For a council, they only get paid if they get another house built. And even then, it doesn't really matter. Well, it's not quite as bigger in terms of what size of house they get. And so I think the worry here is that you don't necessarily have the right incentives. Central government collects a lot of money. That might well be appropriate, but it's also sheeting back a lot of responsibilities on the infrastructure front through to a council. Yeah. Now, I'll give you a very plain example there. If I'm a council and I need to put some more water pipes in, well, it doesn't really make a lot of economic sense. I don't get paid any more for putting extra water pipes in. Whereas if I'm a council and because I get a roading rebate, if I put an extra road in, Waka Kotahi will come back with at least some money. So for councils, they're actually struggling in a sense to figure out how they fund all that additional infrastructure because they don't necessarily get revenue from it.
The other point is, and I know it was $1.1 billion would be returned to them just if GST collected from local government rates went back, which I think you worked out would be 102,000 for Chatham Islands through to 317 million for Auckland. But the other question that people have, if there were to be more of an allocation of taxes essentially to councils, is who trusts them, many of them, to spend it on the infrastructure, to spend it on the essential stuff? When we see some of the behaviours that have seen commissioners brought in some cases and threatened in other cases, do they have the same parameters around them as a central government bureaucracy or not?
Well, I guess that's one, assuming that local councils aren't trustworthy, and two, assuming that central government is the ultimate in trust. And
well,
I'm not sure that either of those are.
I assume neither.
Exactly.
But it's a question people would have about their local council.
Totally. And I think that's why, I mean, and there's been some conversations since we've put out this analysis saying, you know, it would just, you know, throw a whole bunch of money at councils who may or may not use it appropriately. I mean, I think importantly that increase or that amount of money coming through would pay for those cost escalations that I talked about in infrastructure before. But if that's an issue, if that's a concern around central government not trusting local government and similar, one, I think there's a big question over, do we actually know what central government spends all the time? Because I feel like a lot of communities probably have a better idea of what their councils spend their rates on than what central government spends. But the biggest bit there is that there are ways to do it. And you sort of see that with a not bad model with the likes of the National Land Transport Fund. Central government says, look, I'll pay each council to do roading stuff up until this amount, and we've got to sort of okay what's going through. So in the likes of water infrastructure, for example, would that be another way they could do it?
Yep.
They set up a National Water Fund and say, look, we're not fully just giving the cash over to you, but we're going to work with you.
Yep.
We'll still have some control and oversight, but it gives you a bit more money because at the moment you get nothing for water.
Look, fair point on how the money's spent, Brad, but if we were doubling our taxes or increasing them by 20% this year, I think we'd be having a different conversation. And clearly there is a legacy of underinvestment or poor investment for whatever reason, as well as now arguably an inadequacy of funds. Thanks very much, Brad Olson, who is with Infometrics.